The Five Leadership Questions podcast is brought to you by Ministry Grid, an online video-based training resource for all the leaders and volunteers at your church. To learn more and to get a two-week free trial, visit ministrygrid.com/howitworks. That's ministrygrid.com/howitworks. Now, enjoy the podcast. Hey, and welcome to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I am your host, Barnabas Piper. In a moment, I will be joined by my co-host, Todd Adkins, who is the Director of Leadership here at Lifeway Christian Resources. Todd and I had the chance to sit down with Shannon Litton, who is the founder and the president of the 5x5 agency based here out of Nashville. 5x5 is a branding and storytelling agency that works with largely nonprofit organizations, not exclusively, but largely, who are specifically mission-driven. So what Shannon and her agency do, what they're passionate about, is helping organizations who have a specific mission, a specific set of work to help people, to make changes in the world, to do good work, to tell their stories more effectively. Most organizations are not necessarily intuitively good at marketing, and it's a complicated thing. So 5x5 brings their expertise to bear so that these organizations or artists or authors can do the work that they are uniquely equipped to do. So they're a support service for these mission-oriented organizations. So in this conversation, you will hear Shannon talk about organizational culture, something that she is passionate about and that they are passionate about at 5x5, and we obviously have a lot of vested interest in it at Lifeway as well. She'll talk about some books that she's learned from, talk about leading through change and growth, because 5x5 has grown a lot over the last couple years. And then talk about home life balance. She has five kids, and so she and her husband are, you know, they're running a business and they have a full house. And so there's a lot of challenges and excitement in that arena as well. So we cover the full slate of our five questions and where all those things take us. I think you will very much enjoy this conversation. To learn more about 5x5, you can go to 5x5agency.com. That's the digits five. So digit five by digit five agency.com to learn more about their story, what they do, who they work with, their mission. And if you run an organization or have somebody in mind who might want to work with them, that's the website to go to. Now, here's the conversation with Shannon. Enjoy. We are here today with Shannon Litton of the 5x5 agency. You heard in the intro kind of what that agency is, what they stand for. But the first question we ask everybody before the official five is just an opportunity to introduce yourself. So we were talking before we started recording.
Yeah.
You have been in Nashville since you said
99.
So you've seen the city change. So what brought you to Nashville? What got you to your current position?
Yeah.
Did you get where you are? Family, all of those interesting things.
Well, you'll find this really hard to believe, but music brought me to Nashville.
What?
It's an unusual story, so unique.
And then you were a bartender.
Well, we'll skip that part. That's right. Photographer, right. Humanitarian photographer.
Barista, yeah.
I grew up in Central Florida, and my dad was in the music industry in Central Florida. So he was a field rep for Word Entertainment, a distribution company. And it was really cool to have a dad in the music industry in Florida because nobody had that. It's not so special here, but in Florida.
That's right. You're just one of the kids here.
In Florida, I remember I would have friends come over and our whole garage was full of CDs and it was just really super cool. And so after my husband and I were married, my dad got moved to the corporate headquarters here on Music Row. We were up visiting him. We were actually in Franklin, Tennessee, just south of Nashville. Mm-hmm. It was the jazz festival in August and we were sitting on the square.
Wait, hold up. They have a jazz festival in Franklin?
Yeah. Are you not invited?
I haven't found any jazz anywhere in Nashville in 3.5 years.
I think they still do. It's end of summer.
I love jazz.
Yeah.
No, I want there to be jazz in Nashville. It's the music city without that genre.
I know.
Makes me sad.
We were sitting on the square listening to live jazz, eating barbecue, and we looked at each other and we said, we've got
heaven.
To live here.
Yeah. That's heaven.
Drive to Memphis.
Blues, which is also fantastic. And it's Memphis. Anyway.
So it was one of those things that in our young 20s, we moved in like 2 months. We could never do that now, but we just decided to move and we moved.
Yep.
And my husband went to work for Word as well, worked there for a while. And when I came to Nashville, I had been teaching school. I was a middle school English teacher. I loved it. But can I admit that I wanted to make more money? Because that's really what it was about when we moved here.
Yeah.
I love teaching, but I thought, let me see what else I can do for a while. And I ended up working in a marketing department of a technology company with my English degree, writing a newsletter. And it was really a fun time. It was right in the time of the dot-com boom. And I saw it going bust right at the right time and kind of moved on from there and started an agency and have really been in marketing agency world for about 20 years now.
And was 5x5 what you started then, or did it?
No, started another agency.
I was gonna say, I didn't think it.
Yeah, co-founded another agency, was there until 2013 and sold my part of that agency, and then started 5x5. I actually left in 2013 and didn't know exactly what I would do next, but I also have five children, so I'm not really looking for something to fill my time.
There's lots of fives here.
Right. You see a theme?
And we're on 5OQ.
That's right. 5x5 leadership questions, five children,
that's right.
five.
It works.
That's right.
Okay. So, we started 5x5 the next year, and it's been quite a exciting ride the last few years.
All right, and if you could describe why you started 5x5, like what did you set out to do with it? Because it's not just a marketing agency.
Yeah.
Like if you go look at the website, it's not just sort of brand building or something like that.
Right.
So what's the vision mission behind it?
Well, early on, there were a few of us that had gotten together. We all had different agency backgrounds. Mm-hmm. One of my business partners actually was the VP of production for Paramore, which is a big digital agency here in downtown Nashville. And we all sat around and really had a desire to serve what we have now termed change makers. So those that work where life change happens. Our litmus test for our clients is that they have a double bottom line. So everybody has a revenue bottom line. Nonprofits have a revenue bottom line.
Don't we know it?
Do you feel that? Do you feel that line?
A little bit.
But we work with clients that also have an impact bottom line. And so that's clearly you see that in nonprofit space, but we also work across sports and entertainment, work with personal brands, work in healthcare clients, some of them that are for-profits, even some for-profit organizations, but that have some type of an impact piece to them. So we were sitting around early on and we're asking ourselves if the world needs another agency, which is a great question to ask yourself. Does the world need another consultant?
Yeah,
is another question.
Church planters should ask the same question in Nashville. Sorry, guys.
Call out to church planters.
It's getting brutal in the afternoon.
I haven't had lunch yet. I'm a little hangry. Carry on. Sorry.
So we were asking ourselves that important question, and we decided that if we were going to do it, we wanted to solve a problem. And so we knew that the problem, we quickly asked ourselves, what is the biggest problem in marketing communications? And that was easy to answer. The problem is that it's complicated. Mm-hmm. When you get into the marketing space, there's new technologies every day. Just when you get your social strategy working, you wake up and Facebook has changed their algorithms and nobody sees your posts anymore. It changes quickly, right?
Yes. Facebook is like a weekly thing.
It is. We have
tried to solve that one on this podcast before.
Well, you solve it and then it's
unsolved.
Jacked up again.
Yeah. And then they do it to Instagram and
That's right. So we quickly came up with the problem was that it was complicated. And then we looked at each other. We actually had a Thai restaurant and looked around the table at each other and said, who can solve that problem? And we didn't have the quick solution like we had the quick problem. And so we spent a while looking at that and how can we, is there a way to decomplicate marketing? Mm-hmm. Because it is just intrinsically complicated. And in that time, I came across this term 5x5. Do you know what the term means? You ever heard it?
Probably not in the way that you are using
it. Okay. Very few people do. If I ask that a lot of times, if we're speaking or in front of groups, and it's only usually military people that know.
Okay.
It's a term that's used in military a lot. And it's a term for signal strength. Actually, in radio, they used it a lot. And they would rank the signal on 2 1-to-5-point scales. So a 1x1 signal was the worst possible signal. Mm-hmm. A 5x5 signal really meant loud and clear. And so we started looking at that term. And you know, I'm a big believer that though there are things that change quickly, there are also things that never change, right? They're the same yesterday, today, forever. And I think people are one of those things. I think we change how we like to consume things change, but we are the same. And so we looked at that term and we quickly realized that it's the secret sauce of marketing in that 5x5 term. And so the two things that they measure are how clear a signal is and how strong a signal was. And we thought, okay, that's something that still works today.
Oh,
and so we've built a whole model around what we call clarity and reach. And the idea that in marketing, if we have a problem, we either have a clarity and or a reach problem. And so we work with organizations. I think we really struggle in a lot of spaces, but particularly in ministry space, we struggle with clarity. We have so much to say that we don't know how to boil it down and be clear about it. And so we spend a lot of time working on how do we get clarity? And then once we have that clarity, how do we reach the right people? Mm-hmm. But it starts with clarity.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you don't. Part of the issue is a lot of churches and other organizations. The older you become, the more and more complex you get, the more complex your structures, the more complex your even message gets.
It's true.
And so I think it's, man, it's coming back to that whole idea of clarity and mission and vision, but then what are you communicating? Because, and then staying with it and sticking with it and making sure that it is both strong and clear. So
right.
I love that.
Right.
Now, when you say reach, is that both like numeric reach or is it targeted reach?
It's both. And that's the thing about clarity and reach is it's very simplistic,
kind of solves
right?
that problem.
Once you get into those, it's very complicated. I mean, you know, like you were saying, the most difficult thing you can do is make it simple, is be clear, is boil it down to those few things and then say them over and over and over until you're tired of them and everybody's just starting to get it. So that's the hardest thing. And then in reach, it's the same thing. Reach is kind of what we call the traditional marketing plan. How are we going to reach people? But a lot of times we start there and we skip the clarity. When we get to reach, that's when it does get complicated. There's a lot of ways we can reach people. And again, the most difficult thing we do is choose what's the best way and not just the available way.
Gotcha.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and ask our first question, which is, who are you currently learning from?
Who am I not learning from is probably a better question. The older I get, the more I love to learn. And I learn a lot from my team. We have an incredible team and we sit down on a pretty regular basis just to break down what's working in our different divisions, the different places that we're leading, what's not working. But we also, this is not, you'll have heard this before, but we're huge Pat Lencioni fans. Mm-hmm. We believe everything rises and falls on culture, and culture rises and falls on the leader. Mm-hmm. And so we are big, big fans. We sat down when we started 5x5. One of the very first things we did with our leadership team of six people is we went through the five dysfunctions of a team. And it's really...
Is that your favorite of his books?
It probably is.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the first one I read, so it stands out in my mind most.
Yeah, I like them all. I actually love Ideal Team Player Now. It is kind of a follow-up on five dysfunctions of a team. So five dysfunctions is about the team dynamic. Mm-hmm. Ideal Team Player is about how do we find the right people that can handle that dynamic.
Right.
So it's more on the the recruiting side. How do we find the right people? But we sat down a few years ago with our team to go through five dysfunctions. And
it's another five, by the way.
When you don't, it is. See, when you don't know each other well, you go through that, and it's kind of like this. You know, it's the holy grail out there of we're going to confront each other. And then we went back last year. Every October, we do a leadership team retreat. We went back and went through five dysfunctions again with now years of working together. And it was fascinating. And I think it's something that we will continue to do every year. We actually, last year we went around, he has this in the book, an activity to do. And I was too scared to do it early on. I don't think we knew each other well enough, but where you go around and you tell each other, this is what you are best at. And this is an area you struggle in and you need to work on. And we did that as a team in October. And you have to, you can't do that if you don't have trust in a team, right? It just
we
becomes
on a regular basis.
It's called Monday.
It's called Monday.
Yeah, just like team stand up meeting.
That's right.
Yeah, but you're right. It only works with trust, because otherwise you're just kind of breaking each other down.
I will add his other book, one of his other books, Politics, Silos, and Turf Wars, dovetails really well with that one.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a couple of different ways that you can get more out of a team bust through some conflict.
I'm the oddball. I like the advantage the best.
The advantage pulls it all together, basically.
It's the concept book as opposed to like the fables looking at individual things. And those are like, I just don't click with those as much. I don't connect with those as well. I like concepts.
You just skip over the story part and go with the good part.
Which is the last like five pages.
Yes, it's like, yeah, it's like the last third of the book. Right.
Just read it in the bookstore and put it back. But
the advantage is, you know, it's all about how corporate culture, which is
– Well, and the advantage is very practical. It's how you take all of the fables and the philosophies and put them into practice. So it is good.
That's a pretty strong one. All right. So in light of all of that, what you're learning from, your team, who you're not learning from, what is the main point of emphasis for your leadership right now, either in leading a team as a team or like growing personally as a leader?
I think for me, where we're at, we're a fast growing company. We've doubled in a year, and that's that's hard to do. Yeah. There's, you know, somebody said it's high class problems. It is high class problems. I'm grateful for it, but it's a problem nonetheless. And so I think managing that growth is something that's really difficult. And for me as the leader of the organization, I'm having to focus on spending the right time on the right things.
When you say you've doubled, do you mean like your business has doubled or staffing?
Both.
Okay.
Both have doubled. Yeah. And so we're spending, this is why I love Pat Lencioni, as we're going through all of these things. As we grow, you know, culture changes quickly. You add a few people that are not a culture fit, and you lose it. And so we're just being incredibly intentional to keep culture. It really, we just were named, can I brag? We were named one of the best workplaces in Nashville. And we love that. It's voted by the team. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something great. But
that's based on like team satisfaction.
It's based on, it actually, your surveys go out to your team, go straight back to Nashville Business Journal, does the rankings, goes back to them. We never see them, and then they announce winners. So we're proud of that, but it also means that we have a lot that we need to protect. Yeah. And you have to be intentional about that. And so that's a big deal. And then as the leader, I think I constantly am asking myself, what can I do that only I can do? Mm-hmm. So today, as I look at my schedule, what are things that I can pass on to somebody else, that I can entrust to somebody else, that I can, but what are the things that I need to be a part of? What are the things that only I can do? Yeah. Culture's one of those. I really believe if you can have the most well-intentioned culture campaign, and if your top leader is not on board, it will not work.
Right. So follow-up question on that. So you talked about growth and change. So with the growth, culture changes, but you also want to keep your core the same.
Right.
But you're also bringing on new team members. That's a lot of ingredients.
Right.
How do you find somebody who is the right cultural fit for where you're going, not where you were?
That's a great question. I think it's first knowing what your culture is and being able to define that. And so when we bring people in, we're really having to, and I'll be honest, there are people that opt out. There are people that cannot function in a healthy culture.
And that's ideal.
Great. That's ideal.
It is ideal.
It's way better than you
it
having
is ideal.
Them out.
So that's strong. Exactly right.
And so clear that people self-select out if they don't fit.
I mean, I had a conversation with somebody probably 2 months ago that was new that is still there, is doing great, but that early on, they were so used. There are so many truly abusive workplaces. Mm-hmm. And they came in and had a hard time with the fact that when we say something, there's not baggage behind it. We're really just asking a question.
Right.
And I remember sitting down with them and saying, when I ask you, why did we do this? I really just want to know why we did this.
It's not loaded.
And it was hard for them to accept that. And so it's been a process for that person. You know, we're trying not to be counselors, but there's a little bit of counseling in that this is really what a healthy workplace looks like. We all trust each other. If we have a problem with something you're doing, we're just going to say it. We're going to work through it. But that can take time. If you don't work through that, the culture so quickly just becomes all the baggage that people bring into it.
Yeah. And so do you find that a healthy culture tends to kind of massage that out of people, or are some of them just paralyzed and they just can't?
Either or. Yeah, okay. It's one or the other. I think people come in, and especially this is the double-edged sword of winning something like best workplaces, is that you come in and you have these high expectations.
Right.
We're not perfect.
Yeah,
and that's one of the first things we say too. And so people either like the fact that we confront each other and we have hard conversations, or they like the fact that I'd rather go work someplace where everything's just
passive aggressive.
That's right. And it's all just under the table. And you know what? There are plenty of places. I will help them find a place to work.
That's right.
There are plenty like that.
Yeah. No, there's.
Okay. So you mentioned, you know, healthy conflict.
Yeah.
Which we love healthy conflict on our team.
Yes.
What are some other practical ways that you help create and embed culture?
Yeah. I think for us, it's a couple other things. One is truly appreciating people. And that's that goes beyond salary. That goes beyond benefits. We are very intentional about giving credit where credit is due. We celebrate a lot of things. We do a lot of collaboration. There are a lot of team wins. We say there's nothing we love more than a team win, where we don't even know why this was successful, but because we all did it, it was. But there are times where somebody does something exceptional. We are very quick to publicly recognize that. And I think that that's really important. I think the other thing is, particularly as a leader, constantly reminding people why we exist. You know, for us, we have such amazing clients, work with so many great nonprofits, with so many ministry organizations, that it's easy to get into the day-to-day work and forget that. Yeah. Last year, at the end of the year, we'd had an exceptional fiscal year. Our leadership team had set at the beginning of the year some revenue goals. If we hit these goals, you know, top line and bottom line, we had planned a leadership team retreat to Napa Valley. And we got towards the end of the year, our team had grown, and we realized not only were we going to hit the goals, but we felt really bad saying, "Hey guys, thanks for this great year. We're off to Napa." So we decided instead we did what we called our Y tour. And we told our team, about 20 of us, we told everybody to show up on, it was a Thursday morning, be there by 8:30 and be packed for 3 nights. And so we rented a tour bus and we started down at Nashville Rescue Mission, which is a client of ours. We served down there with amazing leadership down there, heard them talk about why they do what they do, thanked our team for all that we've done with some of their creative campaigns the last few years. And then we got on a bus and we drove over to Asheville and we rented a huge cabin for a couple of nights, and we had dinner in downtown Asheville. We went down to Upward Sports in Spartanburg, which is another client of ours. We played in their gym and did some, you know, we played Foursquare and did some fun things.
They have an amazing campus.
Have you been there?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I was there when it was still being built. So like they had just some of the inner fields, but they didn't. But I mean, the rest was all under construction. Yeah. It was incredible.
Yeah. Well, Kaz McCaslin is the founder. Mm-hmm. Super passionate, amazing guy. And when he knew we were coming, he said, "I want to have your team over for dinner."
To his house.
Very and I said, "No, we're really just coming to see the ministry. You don't." He said he wouldn't take no. "You're coming over for dinner." And his wife picks a theme every year. She's one of these, like, the house is decorated. There's parting gifts. It was the most amazing dinner. And we sat in his basement.
What was the theme?
The theme this year, oh, I should remember. She's done Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. She does different Christmas themes.
Yeah.
But we sat in his basement and really just heard
the Grinch.
She's done the Grinch, actually.
She steals everybody's stuff.
Oh, it was Christmas.
Leave.
This year was Christmas in the Jungle. And as we walked up, there were monkeys over
there. Were they playing Welcome to the Jungle?
Yeah,
when you
yes.
Came up?
Yeah, they were.
It's very Christmassy.
Anyways, it was just such an amazing 3 days. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, we have two goals over those 3 days. One was to just have a lot of fun and thank our team for what they were doing. And the other was to really understand why we do what we do. And just for our team, we have designers, we have web developers that, you know, sit and program all day. For them to get out and see the work that our clients are doing was exceptional. And we will do something like that always, just to remind our team.
That's really cool, especially because, I mean, the acknowledgement by the executives that the wins were company-wide.
That's right.
Yeah.
So let's move from talking about, you know, this annual celebration that you all did. Let's break that down into the mystery of the mundane of the everyday.
Yeah.
So how do you, like, what are one or two things that you have to do as a leader every day?
Yeah.
If I don't do this, I am not going to be successful.
Yeah. I mean, you have to remember why you're doing it, and that is intentional. That doesn't show up on your calendar. You know, remember why you do this. I mean, that's an intentional thing. And then I think that another Pat Lencioni book, Four Obsessions of an Extraordinary Executive, that whole book is really about creating clarity in your culture. And so I think just repeating it over and over and over. And when I walk in the office, I think chief culture keeper is my job. And so encouraging people, walking around, you know, and we have to tough. Being in agency world is tough. We're from one campaign to another, multiple clients, deadlines. But
with a vast variety of
vast variety. I mean, that's right.
And looking at your site, you work with some people who are like musicians and authors.
Right.
You work with the National Rescue Mission.
Right.
You've done some work with like Lifeway's women's team.
That's right.
Did I say World Vision on there?
Yeah,
I
mean, World Vision, Compassion.
That's a lot of variety.
It is. It's a lot of variety. Yeah. And so just being the one that's walking around and keeping, you know, the culture positive, mm-hmm. I think is important. And again, I think that I can do that in a way that very few people can do. You know, as the leader of a team, it's your job to do that.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. So you mentioned doing, you know, you highlight only things that you can do, being the culture keeper. So you come into the office in the morning. How do you break those things out? Like, how do you start your day and look ahead, or do you do it the night before to sort of say, this is what tomorrow brings? What are some of those just practical, like laying out my day so that I'm prioritizing the right things, lifting up the right team members?
Yeah. I do it on Sunday nights usually. And we, another thing we do for culture, I think we're just in a culture where we expect people to work around the clock all the time. And so we call it our Sabbath, our 5x5 Sabbath. And from, you know, you would think we're Jewish, but from sundown on Saturday night till sundown on Sunday night, we don't want anybody to check emails. If there's an emergency, we'll text each other, but it's really just this freedom. And I have to tell people, that doesn't mean I want you to check email all day on Saturday, but it's this freedom that we don't want anybody. We expect a tech Sabbath, all of us. And, so then Sunday evening, I'm gearing back into Monday, and I'm looking at my calendar, and I'm plugging those things in. And I often start with, who do I need time with this week? And sometimes it's because there's a struggle there. Sometimes it's because I don't know what's going on in their world, and you know, a leader of a team, and I need to connect with them and see what's going on. And then same thing on the client side. There are clients where I feel like I've not connected in a while, and so I generally have a running list of people that I need to connect with. Sometimes that's in person, sometimes it's a phone call, sometimes, but just making sure that, you know, that I'm initiating those conversations.
Got you. All right. We're going to pivot from 5x5 leadership in that sphere into your home.
Okay.
So the question is very simply, what does leadership in your home look like? So you said five children. That's a lot of people to be led.
It's a lot. It's a little tribe.
So what does leadership in your home look like?
I had a big shift a few years ago. My husband decided he was going to stay home with the kids. So he's working in the music industry. Okay. And the music industry has gone through a lot of changes over the last decade or so. So about 5 years ago, he said, I feel like I'm bailing water on a sinking ship and just kind of dodging layoffs, and loved what he did. But we were adopting two little boys from Ethiopia at the time. So we had two daughters. We were going to adopt one. We ended up adopting two, accidental adoption. And so I wish it was.
No, it's more like a buy one and then another.
Buy one. Pay for two. But we were in the process of going to bring two toddlers. They were 1.5 and 3 at the time. And we were bringing two home at once. And we had two daughters that were still very young. And so we were going from 2 to 4. We knew God had called us to adopt. We didn't know. He didn't tell us exactly what life looked like after that. Yeah. And so
isn't
that crazy? It's not right.
He's like, no, you're going to do this thing.
It's not right.
Just go.
That's right. I was president of another agency at the time. And so my husband came home and said, I think I can stay home with the kids. And I remember thinking, you will hate it, but let's get a year out of it. And then you can find another job. And so that was really my plan.
Use up his goodwill.
That was my plan. Is we'll get a good solid year here. We'll get these kids, and then you can go find another job after that. And not only does he not hate it, he loves it, and he's so good at it. So,
what ages are your kids now?
Yeah, now I have 3 to 13.
Okay,
I have a 10-year spread. After we brought the two boys home, toddler adoptions are difficult. Adoptions of all ages have different struggles. We had adopted two toddlers at the same time, so the first 6 months were just temper tantrums and really tough. Mm-hmm. And so we brought him home in June. In December, I was telling everybody around me, I cannot wait for next year because we've been in adoption process, fundraising process, transition. We're coming out of this transition. They're mm-hmm. settling in. Next year's going to be a normal year.
Famous last words.
And on New Year's Day, I found out I was pregnant. So we went from 2 to 5 kids mm-hmm. in 16 months. And my husband was the one home kind of managing that. And so it's been, I will tell you that first year was tough, even turning mm-hmm. over the house to him. I mean, I had to make a conscious decision. I remember coming home and he had reorganized the pantry. And I remember standing looking at the pantry and he's the one at home now.
Yep.
But I remember standing looking at the pantry and making a conscious decision that I want him to run the home. I don't want him to be my employee at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that he gets to organize the pantry. And it was just this simple but symbolic thing. And for me, I'm a type A. I'm driven. He's a little more laid back. He would have been my employee at home. I could have left him lists, but that's not what I needed. I needed a partner that would yeah. help run our family. And so it was a year of tough transition, but he's moved into that. I've moved into it, and it works. And it's really funny. We just celebrated our 20th anniversary mm-hmm. Last week, actually. And we just, thank you. We just laugh that not one thing that we had planned 20 years ago has happened. I mean, I was going to be a stay-at-home mom and he was going to work and we were going to have 2 kids. And we just look at this life and we think this life is so much bigger and better. And it's just following God every step of the way. It's bigger and better than we ever thought.
Yeah, it's a bit of a change from, you said middle school teacher?
Middle school teacher.
Yeah, that's a...
Well, and that was just...
I'm sure that helps now with middle schoolers.
That was just so I could have the summers off and hopefully stay home with kids someday. That was really the long-term plan then.
Man.
Yeah.
That is... I have 2 daughters. Todd has 3 kids.
Yeah.
5 kids.
So together, you have my family.
Yeah.
But
that would be,
this is me. Yeah. Terrifying.
One other thing I will say that my job does tend to be stressful. I travel a lot and I have had to just set some really simple guidelines for myself. Mm-hmm. And one of them is that I actually have a place in the neighborhood before I get to the street where my kids can see my car. I have a place where I pull off the side of the road and I do my last check of email. Otherwise, what happens is I pull into the driveway.
I do that too.
Do you? Uh-huh. It's really changed things. Otherwise, kids are grabbing at me in the car and I'm still trying to check email. And so I do that. It's my last check of email.
Yep.
And then when I get in the house, I have a basket and it physically has to be a basket. If I lay my phone on the counter, I pick it up all evening. I have a basket that I throw my phone in. And my team knows that if you need me, you text me, there's ways to get into, but I'm not going to touch that phone until the kids are in bed. And it's, that has changed our family in some really great ways.
Hmm. No, that's – yeah, just those little practical things are really helpful for listeners just because it's a little thing that's a big thing.
It is.
I mean, putting a phone down is not a big action, but it is the ramifications are significant. I have a very hard time doing that.
Yeah. Important, though.
So you've been married for 20 years. But go back to your 20-year-old self. What would you – tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to leave?
Yeah.
What advice would you give? What would that conversation
look
like?
I think first I would tell myself to cool my jets. I mean, I was just, I flew through my 20s and I was always looking for what's next and what's the next step and what's the next. And I think I would have slowed down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was really ready. I thought I wanted to lead, but I really needed to learn. And so I look back at that time and rather than just plowing through with trying to step into leadership, mm-hmm. I remember graduating from college and I said, all I want is a door that says director beside it. Like that was my big goal in life, right?
Yeah, no, you were chasing. Like you were.
I was.
You were
I always was. And I think that's good. I mean, I think it's good to have drive.
Yeah, I didn't have that drive.
Did you?
No.
What was your goal when you graduated?
Pay the bills.
Like, that's a good one.
I had no idea. So I was always sort of envious of people with a real clear like direction, but also kind of like they're crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know what to do with
it. Yeah. Well.
But it worked.
Here we are. I do think, though, I would slow down a little bit. I think to somebody that's just constantly wanting to achieve, I think you can miss the good points along the way. And I also think I wish I had found mentors earlier in life. I was so ready to lead other people that I wasn't looking for people to lead me and to learn from. And we all need that. I'm at this point now where I'm needing to lead and I just want to learn. You know, yeah. It's flipped and I want to be with people that know more than me and that have been there and that can pour into me. And now I'm at a point where I'm looking at, you know, a next generation of team members that keep coming in. And so I think early on, just to look around and look for those people that have done it before, there's so many great mentoring relationships, mm-hmm. too, that go both ways now. So cross-generational, where we find somebody, you know, we can learn so much from a younger generation, yeah. and then same thing with an older. And so I think I value that a lot more. I wish I had valued that in my 20s.
How do you convince somebody in their 20s that they need that?
Yeah, I don't know if you can. I don't know if you could have convinced
me.
Because
I feel like that's a perspective that comes with not having it.
Yeah.
Like you come out on the other side not having been mentored or not having listened. Like I didn't listen to anybody in my 20s. And now I look back and go, I really should have listened. But if I could go back, there's no way I could convince 24-year-old me to listen to anybody. Yeah. Like, just not happen.
I will say there is a difference, though, when you look, if you have 20-somethings on your team, mm-hmm. there is a difference between those that are not looking to learn anything and those that will look around and will listen and kind of soak up advice. That's a radical difference in somebody on your team.
Do you find that, so in leading 20-somethings on your team, do you find that they absorb and learn more if you are also actively learning from them? So they look at this and go, I'm being respected. My perspective, my views on the world are being honored.
Right.
And so it becomes a two-way street.
Yeah. And I think part of that, too, is knowing as a leader, where is the flexibility? Mm-hmm. So in our organization, there are things that are they're not negotiable. You know, this is the way we do things. This is the way we interact with each other. It's not negotiable. I mean, the fact that we're going to have honest conversations, a lot of things, even the way we work. You know, we have a policy that we answer every email every day. That means when our clients email us, we're going to respond to them that day, even if it's just I'm checking on this, right? That's a non-negotiable. But there is a lot of areas where there's a lot negotiable. And that's where I think if you have that as a leader, where you can go to not just younger audience, everybody on your team and say, what works best here? Let's figure this out together. I think the more open you are there, mm-hmm. the more willing people are to learn.
No, I think that makes a ton of sense, and that's really helpful. I think that's probably a good place to land this. We could clearly talk about marketing and agency life, and there's all sorts of conversations we could have. But I think for this conversation, we could wrap it here. So listeners, if you go to 5x5agency.com, the fives are digits, not the word five. So 5x5agency.com, you can learn more about Shannon's work and the team's work there. And then again, if you go to lifeway.com/leadership, you can find the show notes to this episode and all of our other episodes. We will have quotes, we'll have resources linked, anything that we've mentioned. So those Patrick Lencioni books and others. So again, lifeway.com/leadership. Check that out. Thanks so much for listening and tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Remember, you can get a free 2-week trial of Ministry Grid at ministrygrid.com/howitworks. Try it out and see how it can help you develop leaders at your church.